Stay tuned to Vinyl Community Podcasts.
What's up, buddies? Hey, it's Concert Buddy, courtesy of Vinyl Community Podcast. And I'm excited on this one. And probably long overdue, as my guests will probably agree. Back with my series, Mind of the Record Collector, the series that asks what we collect, why we collect it, how we find it. I'm joined by the illustrious, one of the, if not the OG of the vinyl community on YouTube, that is Brandon, Mr. Hall of Fame. Brandon, how are you, sir?
Doing well.
Are you ready for this? Because we've talked about this for a while. So
I'm more than ready. I'm like, I've been so excited to do this. Like, I've even asked you a couple of times, like, dude, when am I going to get a chance to do that? Because I freaking love it. I love the other episodes. So I'm excited.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm excited to do it too. And I got to be honest, I got to come clean. And I kind of told you this before, but I wanted to kind of get my wings and how I did this, because obviously we're friends outside of YouTube. And so I wanted to make sure that I wasn't having any kind of, for lack of a better word, homerisms and, you know, like just kind of being a big nerd about it. So I want to have a little bit of professional polish, but come on, man, you know me. Like, I'm just wanting to have a good time and talk records and all that kind of stuff. So I think I'm ready. We'll find out afterwards. I had Melinda on before, so I've already kind of like polished up my professional. We'll see how it goes with you.
Hey, let's do it.
So let's kind of kick into how a lot of folks hopefully know you, and if they don't, they're going to learn about you for the first time, and that is collect records. You were one of the first people out there who went on the YouTube to talk about collecting records. Tell us about, and when did that start, and tell us about, I mean, what was the motivation behind it?
YouTube or record collecting?
Both. Well, let's start with the record collecting, and then how that leads to YouTube. How about that?
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, like most people that collect vinyl, you know, I've been into music my entire life. It's always been a gigantic influence. But even when I was younger, I never bought records at all. When I really first started buying things, it was cassettes. And then, of course, I moved right into the CDs when that came around in the 90s. And I just happened to be in this store one day, and I'll never forget, it was a day that I bought a Slaughter Stick It To You CD. And I happened to look over and I saw this little box of records in this dollar bin. And I was like, oh, just go look through. I mean, they're records, all the covers. It's kind of fun. I ended up buying like 8 of the records out of the dollar bins, a lot of old 80s R&B stuff. I didn't have a turntable, but it's just, they're a buck a piece. They're cool. I remember these bands. So I bought these records and they sat on my floor literally 7 to 8 months. I had no turntable, no anything. They were just a pile of stuff sitting there. And another day, I'm in another store looking at CDs, and there's this little Sony turntable sitting there. It's $40. Hey, if I buy this thing, I can play those records I have at home. And took it home, and then, you know, boom, it just absolutely took off.
That's awesome. And so how long were you kind of ingratiating yourself in collecting vinyl before then you kind of were like, hey, YouTube, let me try it. Like, how long of a gap is that?
There was probably a gap of maybe a year and a half or 2 years, maybe somewhere around there. And yeah, I remember I actually made my first YouTube video. I think it was back in 2007 and 2007, 2008, somewhere right around there. And there was absolutely no vinyl community whatsoever.
Yes.
Matter of fact, the entire reason I made that first video, you can go back and watch it. And I say at the very beginning of it, you know, I love collecting vinyl. I came here to YouTube to see if there were other people that liked vinyl and I couldn't find anything. So I figured, I guess I better make a video myself to get the ball rolling. And like, I literally said that at the beginning of my first video, and I just flipped through and showed some things in my collection. I wasn't even talking about it. I'm just showing some things. And that was the whole reason I made that first YouTube video.
And had you ever like made any kind of videos before? Was this like a true kind of voyeur kind of thing, or I mean, because YouTube was still, so 2007, 2008, it had been around less than 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I had never made any type of videos, never thought about making videos, anything like that. It was just the vinyl bug had bitten me so hard, and I wanted somebody else to talk about it with. And I went, sure. I thought, oh, YouTube, there must be people, and there was really like no one.
That's well. As the pioneer of the space, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that you were literally just kind of walking around like a Twilight Zone episode. You're kind of walking around. Is anyone here? Yeah. But people, evidently answered the call. What are some of those first kind of channels and collectors that you kind of connected with in the early days?
Oh man, I remember the very first one where there was like three guys at the beginning that responded to me pretty quick, and we just kind of started talking, and they maybe had made one video, just kind of like, you know, hey, I'm here too, kind of thing. But then there was a guy, his name was Dan. I think he called himself Dan in Canada or something like that. Younger guy, he was kind of in an indie band. He knew all those weird bands that nobody else really kind of knew about on the indie side and stuff like that, but just a very knowledgeable guy. But I made his name was What's Up Hamadi was his username. He hadn't made any videos, but he asked me a question where he said, what were the five most influential albums that really kind of sparked all of your musical taste today? Like, where did it all come from? And man, I spent like three or four days just hammering into that question, trying to narrow it down at Kenny G Live, because that was my introduction to all things jazz. Okay. And the Dan guy up in Canada, he saw the video and he was like, oh man, you had me at that Kenny G. That was so funny. And he made a response. And it seemed like from that interaction, all of a sudden, 10, 15, 20 people came out of the woodwork. And then just like, from my perspective, that's where the VC actually started, was that interaction with Dan.
That was the big bang. That was,
yeah, that was it right there.
Oh, that's funny. Well, now we're in 2024 when we're filming this, and I mean, gosh, 2008, I'm not great at math, but I had the Alfredo at Olive Garden. So you're talking about 16 years now, right?
Yep.
16 years of this. And I mean, I ask this to a lot of folks I have honor, but what does the vinyl community, I'm using air quotes, right? Because I think you and I are aligned on this. The vinyl community is much more than just the YouTube experience, right? There's the local record store. There's people we bump into at the record shows, all that sort of thing. So when I use the term vinyl community, what does that mean to you?
I mean, I think it means just what you said. I think it is a community in terms of a group of people kind of coming together and, you know, living this same passion, living this this kind of shared experience. And I think just like a lot of communities, it's just something that I feel like it constantly grows and becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Where, as I was just kind of saying before, it was 10 or 15 guys and everyone knew everyone and everyone watched everyone's video. And, you know, you fast forward, I never would have thought, you know, 15 years ago that it would kind of be this place where, like I said, people are meeting up, you know, meeting people from all over the world. And all of a sudden it's like, it's real friendships. It's actually taking place in real life and not just through the screen and all of that. So yeah, I mean, it's just been a growing, flourishing community, just like you would expect.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because we're kind of examples of that, right? Like I was one of these lurkers. I've said this story many times, but I was watching guys like you and learning from you and really just kind of feeding my inquisitive nature about best practices or music, learning new music and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, found out that we are literally in the same like town, essentially, you know what I mean? Metropolitan area. Blew my mind. Like, but I think I started seeing like little cues in your videos and I'm like, think I know where that is, that kind of stuff, right? So it's kind of wild. But yeah, to your point, to think that in you know, 15, 16 years that it's gone from behind the screen to actually making like real connections with real people, learning about them, etc. Now, one thing I want to be real careful about when in this conversation is that you've answered a lot of these questions already because you did a wonderful series. You did like an Ask Me Anything, like a Reddit style thing on your channel. Right. So I'm sure there are people who are going to hear a lot of the same answers from me asking questions. It's a wonderful series. Go to Brandon's channel. I have all the information below. But just for people who may be new to the Mr. Hall of Fame experience, we got to start right there. The name Mr. Hall of Fame. Tell us about, I know what it is, but tell us about it. Because obviously, you know, when you're starting a channel now, some of us young guns, we put a lot of thought into this. But was there a lot of thought into you coming up with the name? What was that about?
It was kind of just one of those right place, right time kind of things. It was a day when I was putting together my channel and I was trying to figure out a username and all of that. And I got a call from my college and they basically had told me, hey, we just wanted to give you a call and let you know that you've been inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Athletic Hall of Fame here at the college. and, you know, it's going to be a ceremony, the dinner and blah, blah, blah. And so, like, when I hung up the phone, I was like, you know, all excited and everything. Like, whoa, that's pretty freaking cool, getting inducted to, you know, a Hall of Fame. Oh, Mr. Hall of Fame. How's it? It really was like that direct and that simple. It just landed on the right day.
That's funny. Well, and Brandon's being modest. Like, Brandon was quite the hooper back in the day. Him and I, I was a hooper, but I'm obviously very vertically challenged and probably the wrong demo to be very good at it. But we've talked about this offline, but you're a pretty good hooper. You played some pickup with like Chris Webber. Like, you have some wonderful stories, and not that anybody in the record community is like, Chris Webber, who's that? But, you know, but you're being very modest because at the time you finished your college career, you were the all-time leading scorer, right, at your college?
I was definitely had some decent accolades. I was proud of my career. I was fourth all-time leading scorer, fourth all-time leading rebounder, three times all-conference and all-American my senior year.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
I'm fortunate to get to know you offline, and I think it's awesome because that's Mr. Hall of Fame. But man, you did the damn thing, as they say.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I mean, many moons ago, but yeah, my college years were a great experience for sure.
That's awesome. So back to the topic at hand, back to the lecture at hand. Now, see, that's a deep Easter egg. We'll see if anybody gets that.
I got it.
So, Vinyl Community, YouTube, seeing it grow or evolve or devolve, as some would say. What do you think? Has it made the hobby better? Has it informed or shaped your collecting outlook? And we'll kind of get into your collecting background a little bit deeper than we did at the open. Do you think, for lack of a better word, has it been a good thing?
For me personally, it's definitely been a good thing. I think when you look at the community as a whole, as you would expect, the more something grows, the more people, the more personalities, the more perspectives that are involved, you're going to have to take the good with the bad, right? But I mean, overall, I definitely think it's a good thing. I think being able to reach out and connect with people that understand where you're coming from with this thing that you're so passionate about and that oftentimes just like guide so many different portions of our lives, I think that's a great thing. And even with the negative that can come within the community, I think it's also a good thing. I shouldn't say good thing, but at least you have the capability of saying, you know what? I don't want to deal with that piece of this. I don't want to deal with that person. Like, so even with the negativity that comes, you have a good piece of control over all that stuff. So yeah, overall, I definitely think it's a very positive thing.
Yeah, and one thing to piggyback on there, because you made a video once that really stuck with me, and I think it's even before you and I connected, about those negative aspects. Because like I said, any community, it doesn't matter if it's video game collecting or carpentry, I don't know. There's always going to be some conflict, personalities, etc.
Right.
But you did a video one time talking about like freedom of speech, which I thought was very interesting because for a lot of us, you see some of this riffraff and you're just like, you know, shut it down. It's foolish. You know, you take a position very easily and very early.
Right.
But you kind of opened my eyes to at least letting people say their piece, try to understand things from their point of view, because you're a big First Amendment guy, right?
Right.
And even when it's vehemently against maybe your core values or maybe your worldview, but you made this video and it really stuck with me. And tell us a little bit about that, because obviously talking about trolls, which we've talked about before, and not to get into that so much, but there are people who just feel like just popping off, telling you how much they don't like it or what you got wrong or that sort of thing. So how do you kind of balance that between letting people have a space, even if they don't necessarily are positive about it, but also kind of, I think the analogy is like inviting people into your house. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like when you look at all of that stuff, the negativity that comes from trolls and all that type of thing, it really just kind of boils down to some little level of power that someone is trying to grab. Right. It's like they're only saying that and doing those things because they want some type of response from you. And it's kind of sad because even on kind of like a subconscious level, we're human. Right. And we all want to communicate and have connections with people. And some people just don't understand that even on kind of a subconscious level, even if that connection is negative, I'm having a connection with somebody else. You know, they don't know they're doing that, but that's there, right? So for me, it's one of those things where it's just like, I refuse to give someone that power in my life. Like, that really is what it boils down to. And so, yeah, you could have a negative response about something on my channel or whatever else. And, you know, I'm just going to block you. Or from now on, when I see a comment come up, if I see your name at the very top, I don't have to read what's said. Like, maybe you're apologizing. I'm sorry if I don't see it, because as soon as I see your username, delete, I'm not even going to let that even into my world, you know? And maybe it's going a little bit deeper, but it's like, I feel that way about almost like so many things in life. Like, you know, even with me being a Black man, that type of thing, it's like being so easy that someone can come along and say one racial slur and people will lose their mind. And I'm like, that gets to have no power over me. You know, have a nice day. Come talk to me when you need a job and I won't give you one. You know, they're like,
there's some real power right there, my friend.
Yes, right, sir. Exactly. That's where the power is. Or maybe an artist, you know, does something or says something and I'm not going to listen to their music anymore. I'm not going to. Why would I let their negative action have power over the melodies or the grooves that I want to hear? Like, your negativity doesn't get to control what I get to enjoy. But so many of us are just so quick to give that away. She said something negative, so I'm never going to listen to their music again. Well, you must have liked it. So why are you going to let them control when you listen to it and when you don't? Like, take your power back, plain and simple.
No, that's awesome. I love that. And the house analogy, too, that's the one that's really stuck with me, because, you know, like, you made a really fair point about, you know, in a lot of ways, when people come to watch our videos or whatever, they're mm-hmm. guests in our home. And if they don't behave, you're not going to have them back. It's simple as that. Yeah. And honestly, and it really kind of, I hate to say it, you really dumbed it down for me, because, like, I hadn't really thought of it like that, but it's true. Because when I first started my channel, you know, why would anybody be negative? I'm just talking about records or talking about music or sharing tips on things I've learned over the years. And, you know, they're out there. And then I saw that video and I was just like, man, that's a great way to compartmentalize that, because block. It's a magical thing.
Yeah.
That block button, or just like you said, you see that name. Oh, there's that person again. Forget it. But great segue, Brandon. We didn't organize it this way, but you kind of hit on the next question I was going to ask you, because, you know, for lack of a better word, the vinyl community on YouTube is a lot of old white guys. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm kind of half the equation, right? But being a person of color, and I kind of talked about this with Tone Scott when I had him on, like, how do you find that? I mean, is it different waters to navigate sometimes for you? Or is it just, you know, like, hey, we all agree on this and we're all, you know, like, it's just communal, right? Like, tell me about that from being, from your unique perspective.
Yeah. I mean, there's been nothing whatsoever having to deal with like racial tensions or anything like that within the vinyl community. Right. The one thing I seem to find is when it comes to music, you like my band, we're here. Like, it's just like that simple and that clear. You know, that's kind of the one thing for me that makes music so great. You know, it's just like, once someone likes your band, your album, your whatever, we're automatically family, kind of thing. And that's the only thing I've ever experienced in, you know, having to deal with any type of thing based on race, so to speak. Matter of fact, I think if anything, it's always kind of a positive response of like, oh, you're into Megadeth. Oh, you're into, you know, dope. Oh, you're into, you know, whatever it might be.
That dope the band. Dope the band.
Band, yeah.
You can see somebody clipping this off and be like, oh, I knew it. Brandon's a great.
Right. Or, you know, hold up an Enya album or something like that. So it's more so kind of the positive surprise of, I never would have thought you were into that. That's so cool, kind of thing. But yeah, I've never seen, with all the issues that may be in the vinyl community, the whole, like, anything dealing with race or something like that, it's just never been one that's even shown itself to me.
That's awesome. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the real fun stuff, and that's record collecting as the hobby, because one thing I really admire about you is the way you go about building your collection. Cause in a lot of ways, it's one of the premier collections I've ever seen assembled. Now, I haven't been to your house yet. We got to work this out. I think this is a quid quo pro, is that we're doing the interview and then I'll finally get over to the man cave. But no, in terms of how you go about your process, I mean, I've and a lot of people have kind of stolen some of your best practices about being disciplined, about having a certain area to clean, to organize, how you sleeve, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, as we're collection building, and we'll get into that here in a second, how important is it for you to remain disciplined to a process so you don't get overwhelmed? Because you have a large collection. How big is the collection now?
Right about 5,000.
So you got 5,000 pieces, and keeping that all in a very findable order, a searchable order, an easy access order, right? How important is it, this process, this discipline to you and how you go about collecting?
I would say it is definitely important, but it's more so important because of the extra layer of fun that it brings to the table. Right. So in other words, like one of the elements behind collecting vinyl is the whole physical nature of it, right? Owning it and so forth. So when I think about the way that I organize and go about collecting and all of that, really the way it comes across to me is it's one more way I get to interact with my collection, because just putting it on the turntable and listening to it is not the only way to interact with a vinyl collection. And it, to me, if that's all you're doing, which is fine if that's the way you have enjoy it. But I also feel like you may be missing something if that's all you're doing is pulling out your records and putting them on the turntable, then putting them back on the shelf. You know, there's so many times when I've come into my collection and I'll sit here flipping through things and looking at things and pulling out things and reading things. And it may be like 45 minutes. I haven't played a single record, you know, because I wasn't thinking about listening to music. I was just wanting to interact with the artwork, the covers, you know, just whatever the case may be. So it is very important to me to go through that organizing process in the way that I do it. But like I said, it's not because of like an OCD thing as much as, God, it's one more fun way I get to interact with this physical media.
No, it's great to put it. And because you're hearing about, and I literally just read an article over the weekend, or saw a video too about it, that the labels and the people who own the music, you know, they're really pushing us to this subscription type of approach, right? It started with like MP3s directly or indirectly. I think Napster kind of forced their hand there, but that's another topic for another day. Right. But, you know, just in terms of like how we consume music organically, radio is kind of like, you know, played out. There's satellite. There's other ways to learn about new music. But in terms of like people that usually have Spotify, they usually have Apple. There's so many different ways of these subscription models that the actual tactile, the actual owning something seems to be kind of slowly, you got to pay attention, but slowly, not saying been taken from us, but remember like physical media in general. You used to be able to go to Best Buy and get a movie. Can't do that anymore. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, yep. So it's very interesting, particularly as somebody who's been collecting as long as you and even me to a certain extent, that this almost makes collecting even more important because you own it, right? Like, obviously you don't own the masters to the music or anything like that, but in terms of being able to, like you said, immerse yourself in the experience is kind of being held to our 79th organ, right? Right. So how do you, does that make you appreciate your collection and building and continuing to maintain and shape your collection even more, given that it seems like the labels and so forth are kind of pushing us more toward the subscription model where you don't own anything. You don't own the MP3s. If God forbid something happens to me or you tomorrow, it doesn't matter if they're in our will. We can't will them our MP3 collection or our remaining months of the Apple Music, right? So it's a very interesting time. So where do you kind of fall on that, Brandon?
Well, maybe I'll answer it this way, because I think it's kind of touching on the same thing, you know, because one of the questions that I've gotten so many times over the years is like, why vinyl? You know, why do you collect vinyl? Why do you? And the best way I've come to describe that is it's because that's how much I love music. And let me explain really quick what that means. I'll ask the person, I'll say, like, do you love your wife or your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever? And they'll say, well, yeah, I love them to death. How did you grow to love them? You grew to love them by, frankly, interacting with them, by taking them in with your senses, right? Seeing them, see how attractive they are, talking to them, interacting with them, hearing their voice. You know, that t-shirt they left that they wore the other day, like their smell is there. It's like touching them, actually feeling and interacting with
each other. Sensory experience. Yeah.
Yeah. You're using your senses to take in someone or this, let's say, thing that you love. Now, somehow the record labels convince people the music that you love, you don't need to use your senses as much to take it in. Drop the touch, you know, drop the sight. You only need to see this little 1 inch by 1. You don't need to see the big 12 by 12. You don't need to touch. You don't need to operate. You don't need to. And so I think it's just after a while, people are like, oh, technology is cool.
Well, convenience, but, right? Like, it's under the guise of convenience and efficiency when,
Right. But it's like now that that's kind of been here, people are starting to realize, whoa, jumping back in and interacting with my music this way and seeing it on the wall and seeing the stack over there and visually, and they're starting to engage their senses back into music. And I think we as collectors, that's just something where we're like, no, you're not going to take away that touch. You're not going to take away that smell of that brand new record or that, oh my God, that came from a smoke. That wasn't a smoke-free house. It's like that stuff is special. Yeah. It really is.
Or the crack of the spine on like a brand new gatefold.
Right. It's like that sound. It's just like, no. Yeah. And I think most people that first get into vinyl, they always describe the crackling of the, that's what I think most people initially go to is same thing. It's like, that's just something special.
For sure. Yeah. Along those lines, what kind of advice would you give, say, your earlier self about collecting along those lines? Like, because you're pretty consistent, I would say, in terms of like why you collect, how you collect. Mm-hmm. Is there something, if you could go back to, I don't know, 10 years ago or even pre-YouTube brand and just getting out in this hobby and seeing and knowing where things have kind of gone? Is there a piece of advice you could kind of carve out for them about, hey, enjoy this part of the hobby? Like we're talking about the sensory pieces, the tactile pieces. Is there like an easy piece of advice you would give them earlier, Brandon?
I guess giving earlier Brandon advice and giving someone advice today would probably be two very different things.
Okay, well, tell me about it.
Early Brandon advice, outside of, knowing what's more collectible before things are collectible, so you can't really say that. But there's really not a lot that I would change from when I first started collecting, because I was just going out and buying all the things that I loved. And I was doing it at a very rapid pace. But of course, back then, everything was in dollar and $2 bins kind of thing. So there's not a heck of a lot that I would change about what I did early on in my collecting. Maybe paid a little more attention to condition, which I wasn't as in tune with early on.
Yep.
But outside of that, I really enjoyed my early experience and wouldn't change a lot about it. If I was giving someone advice today, I would say don't get caught up with trying to keep up with the Joneses type of thing. Just really, if you have record stores available, if you do have that option, just go into a record store and start browsing. Just seeing what makes you giggle, seeing what makes you go, oh my gosh, see, all that type of stuff, and just let yourself enjoy the experience. And I think you will naturally start grabbing the things, at least initially, that you want to grab. But don't listen to me or anybody else saying, like, this analog pressing of blah, 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 you need this MoFi pressing is these Japanese. No, screw that stuff for now. Just go enjoy. Yeah. Go enjoy.
No, that's great advice. One thing I've been kind of wrapping my head about, and I'm curious your take on it, kind of along those lines of the journey, right? The new to the hobby, somebody's been in it a while, the evolution. Do you think that they're like, and it's, I don't think it's so easy to quantify, but call it levels or stages to collecting? Because this is why I'm setting it up, because I'm finding that I have a lot of those grails already. Like, unfortunately, over the years, I've accumulated a solid collection. But now I'm reaching for the stars. I'm reaching for those pieces that have always just been a little bit more than I wanted to spend. And so I'm finding myself buying less of the low-hanging fruit, if you will, and investing, literally and figuratively, investing more effort into chasing down those star pieces. Can you relate? And do you think that there are levels or stages to collecting?
Oh yeah, I can totally relate, and I firmly believe there are different stages when you start going through your collecting, and I think the first and most important thing to me is allow yourself to go into new stages. I think people get way too hung up on this is what I do, this is what I always do, and if that works for you long term, then fine. But again, my personal advice is, be open that once you get collecting to a certain degree, there might be something that comes along that sparks your interest or makes you think, oh, I want to go a different direction because this cup has been pretty full over here, maybe with like, you know, core pieces. And now all of a sudden I want to focus on some stuff that's a little more rare. I may want to start focusing on condition. I may want to start focusing on, you know, different pressings, whatever the case may be. But yeah, always, always let yourself be open to going to a different stage of collecting because it will happen long term for sure.
Yeah. And condition's the one that you really like inspired me about because, you know, we're getting started, you know, and some of these older records, you've seen this, everyone's seen this at Collects. Some of those older records that look terrible, that look like they've been through a pin cushion, they play like champs, right? But then you can get a newer pressing that you think you can eat off of and you put it on and it sounds like, pardon my French, ass, right? So, but the bigger point is the condition piece. And I think that's, for me, where I found myself the last couple of years because, yes, those core pieces like you're talking about, got them. But do I have the best condition? Do I have the best, you know what I mean? And so that is another nuance. And again, I'm not trying to push people into like being a condition snob, nothing like that. More about, will it make me enjoy it more? And then the chase becomes, is this the best possible version of this? Because, you know, a couple of years ago, I went through this stage and I think you can probably relate it, the audiophile stuff, right? Like, is this the best sounding? And obviously that's very subjective and that's a whole nother conversation. But from that, is this the best way I can present, especially if it's something you're really passionate about, a band, an artist,
right?
Is this the best way I can enjoy this experience? And through that, it's, you know, taking me down some weird rabbit holes about, you know, is it AAA, the mastering engineer phenomenon? You know, these guys are like rock stars now. I mean, it's a very interesting time in the hobby. But how did you get, I won't call it hyperfixated, but just more disciplined about condition? Because like you said, there's a stage where you're amassing, you're collecting, especially if you can get it cheap and your collection building like really from volume. And then now it becomes more quality over quantity. Like how did that evolve where you became very hyper, acutely focused on condition?
There were two things that happened that really sparked that. Number one, there was one day when I was, you know, it was a Saturday afternoon, wanted to play some music, and I pulled out this copy of a Led Zeppelin Houses of the Holy. And I put it on and I'm listening to it. And then, you know, it has some crackles and pops, you know, especially some of those quiet parts and some few different songs on that album. And it was enough to where I wasn't really enjoying the album. So I was like, I don't want to listen to that. So I took it off and I put it back on the shelf. Then I went and got a copy of Christopher Cross, self-titled, because that's the kind of weekend I was having. Led Zeppelin to Christopher Cross. And I put that on. Same thing. A few too many pops. I take it off, put it back on the shelf. And as soon as I was putting it back on the shelf, I was like, why am I putting this back on the shelf? If I can never pull it off and listen to it and enjoy it, what's the point of having it?
Yeah.
So I made a decision right then and that day. I said, I'm going to go through every single one of my albums, test play a bit of it. And if anything looked too bad, had too many crackles and pops, it's an immediate purge. And I went through like all 4,000 or however many albums I had at the time, went through every single one of them and pulled them out. And they weren't junk. They were just, you know, VG plus albums that had a few pops and crackles and some ring wear or something like that. And I just started selling all of those and trading all of those in at a local record store and getting new stuff. And I was all about everything that comes in has to be, you know, absolute excellent to near mint condition.
Sure.
So that was one of the things that really started the process. And the second one was around that same time, you know, Robert Z here in the vinyl community. Yep. You know, the one thing that his collection is, I feel like his collection is very well known for is when you talk about some of the rarest pressings in the most amazing condition, like he is just obsessed about that. He just always has been. And I remember just kind of watching his videos and even just the way that he was handling his albums. Like he would talk about this, Black Sabbath Master of Reality white label promo Japanese pressing. You know, your jaw is already on the ground because of like that, but then it's just absolute perfection from top to bottom. And this may sound weird, but just like even seeing his hands and the way that he would handle his CDs and handle his media, it was like he was holding something precious. Like I have to be very gentle and somehow I connected with that. And I was like, here is another element to collecting that you can enjoy. Record collecting is the condition side. Some people don't care to, that's not a part where they get their enjoyment, and that's fine. Some people do. And so like those two things put together is what made me just become so obsessed with the condition of my collection.
So similar vein, I mean, I don't know, there's an easy way to say it. Would you consider yourself an audiophile? Because that's kind of a very easily distinguished or distributed moniker for people who chased the top of the top, right? And I'm talking audiophiles more about sound, right?
Yeah.
But do you think like a label like that has any real kind of like value or importance in how you collect? Case in point, you already have a record. You're very happy with a record. You enjoy it. You may have multiple copies, but here comes Acoustic Sounds, Old Chatty, Boys and Girls in Salina. And they're like, this is the best. We feel we can make this. Does that make you want to get that? Or does it really depend on title? Or are you an audiophile? All the above.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's an all of the above thing. I mean, it's like, maybe I don't have the thousands and thousands of dollars to spend, you know, 15 grand on a turntable and all of that. But do I invest effort into making my system sound as good as it possibly can? Yes. If someone is telling me a pressing actually sounds a lot better than another pressing, it's like, yes. At the same time, it's also like, maybe I go buy that Analog Productions pressing or something, because not only am I a music fan, but I'm also a collector. Mm-hmm. It's like, I am collecting something here. This isn't, I shouldn't say I hate. I'm not one that gets along with, it's all about the music.
Okay.
No, it's not just all about the music, or I wouldn't have
take some of that, Norman Maslow.
and I'm saying that in the context of, if someone, like, let's say you have a sealed copy of something, and you have a U.S. pressing of something, you have an Analog Production pressing of something. Well, why do you have those three records? Well, it's like, if I have a sealed copy of a record and I'm not playing it, that's not a waste, because the records are meant to be played. Well, baseball bats are meant to be, you're meant to play baseball with them. But do you ever walk into someone's house and go, why do you have those four bats on the wall and you're not using them? You're supposed to be playing baseball. If you're not playing baseball, why do you have them?
Sure.
Everyone would go, oh, you're a sports collector. These are different bats that represent different things and you like having them. It's like, well, we do the same thing with records. So it's, I'm doing it all. I'm being, you know, kind of an audiophile. I'm a music lover. I'm a music collector. Like, I'm doing all of those things.
Yeah, no, it's a great way to put it, because I think some of the pushback from some, and not in a derogatory way, but just more of, are you an archivist? You know what I mean? Like, especially if you collect like sealed pressings, right? Do you kind of, how do you respond to like somebody who'd be like, well, you don't listen to it. Like, how do you get any joy out of it? As a collector who collects sealed records as part of your collecting journey, how would you respond to something like that?
It'll be the exact same thing I was just saying. Like, I've never heard anyone go to a stamp collector and go, you have this big book of stamps. If you're not mailing any letters with them or anything, why do you have them?
Sure.
For some reason, with all these other things, baseball cards, all this other memorabilia and everything.
Complete in box video games. Yeah.
Right. Everybody understands collecting and having something and maybe not using it at that moment. But for some reason, when it comes to a record, you have no ability to understand that there's some people that like to collect musical stuff. Now, there's not a single record in my collection that I have not listened to. Maybe it's a sealed copy, but I have another pressing of it, or I have it on CD, or I have, because a very hard rule for me is, before any record goes on my shelf, I have listened to every single thing on that album. Mm-hmm. So sealed or not, I've listened to the music, but yeah, say collecting is a big part of enjoying the whole experience of physical media.
Cool. Well, last thing before we move on to another piece of collecting, another extension of collecting we'll get into is, you know, with the YouTube and the platform and the reach and the community and all those things, do you feel a responsibility about like the content you make and the videos you make of you know, making sure that you have details pointed out? Because I know a lot of videos, and I do this too, you know, you go from your own subject matter expertise and passion and then kind of make the content. Today's era of making recommendations, like you said, like, you're sharing your journey and sharing what you enjoy out of it. I think a lot of people have taken that to an extent of, well, Brandon recommended this record. Well, for him, yes. Or for Chance, yes. How do you find that interesting kind of little nuance to this whole YouTube experience? Because I know I've bought several titles from people because people said it was good, and rather than maybe sampling it on a streamer or checking it out, a little bit more easily before investing in the vinyl, and then I got it. I was like, well, it's not for me. So, do you feel a certain responsibility about sharing your passion, but doing it in a way that you don't want to like inspire people to just buy every record you show?
Actually, I feel almost zero responsibility with that. I think it's one of those things where if anything I'm talking about on the video, it's just me absolutely sharing exactly what I think and feel about, you know, this piece in my collection or what I'm currently doing within my collection. I think the only thing I feel a responsibility of is anytime I'm deciding to make a comment or say something on someone else's video or talk about someone else, always doing it with a level of respect. Like that's the only responsibility that I feel. So if I'm watching a video and let's say it's someone who's new to collecting and they're, you know, they have a Crosley turntable, that's one you see a lot of, and you see all these comments about that turntable sucks, it's going to ruin your records, it's going to, and it's like, okay, there's some like inkling of truth to that long term, but this is someone that is actually jumping into this thing that we think is so great. They love records too. They're just getting started as well.
Yep.
Yeah. Great collection. Roll with it. Start buying more vinyl. Over time, you know, you might want to look at maybe upgrading your turntable because you'll actually get a much, much better audio experience out of these records that you're clearly investing good money in because you're buying good stuff. Like, how simple is it just to let some, like, be able to share that with somebody and also say, welcome to the family. This vinyl family is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I don't get that how that's so hard for people to do. But
I don't either. Being nice, it don't cost anything to be nice, but you know, you would think
that's one place I do feel a responsibility. I'll never jump on somebody's video and just start telling them that's crap, you're wrong, you're blah blah blah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So now one thing that not a lot of people know, I think some people know, is that you've taken your love of collecting, your love of music to a different level in a lot of ways, and that you started kind of like, I don't call it a side hustle, but just kind of a side operation. Mm-hmm. And it's a curation service. It's called Sounds of You Curating, correct? Tell us about it.
It was kind of an interesting thing. I have my girlfriend has a friend that lives out in the Mountain West, and she owns a business where she used to be a librarian, and she started her own business where she curates libraries for basically people that have good coin.
Sure.
Like, you know, she'll go into their homes and just put together these amazing, gigantic libraries. And I guess somewhere along the line, someone asked her like, hey, do you do vinyl records too? We would love to have a vinyl record collection. So long story short, you know, she knew my girlfriend, they knew that I did that and blah, blah, blah. And so she kind of hired me, if you will, to curate a music collection for this couple. Mm-hmm. And it was like one of the most fun things in the world that I've ever done. We put together this questionnaire and, you know, sent it out to them and communicated with them, like, what type of stuff are you looking for? What are you into? What are must-haves and all that kind of stuff? And I basically went out and put together like this 500-piece collection for them. And it was so much fun. We were like, hey, if you get any more of those, let's roll with it.
Sure.
And he was like, well, here's another one. And then here's another one. And I'm like, hey, this may be kind of a weird thing to kind of dip my toe into. So I kind of started a little, I'm not going to say necessarily business, but like you said, maybe kind of a side hustle on my own, and set up a website and mm-hmm. all of that. So I'm just kind of in the process still now of doing that exact same thing.
No, that's awesome. And I remember you kind of were talking to me about the concept, and I thought it was great because, to your point, there are people who, you know, like don't know where to get started, right?
Right.
For lack of a better word, they have the financial acumen to, you know, say, hey, like the amount of time and subject matter expertise, I'm so far behind. Let me put it in the hands of somebody who can do me right. And I can't think of, honestly, and this is not smoke up your backside, I can't think of anybody who'd be better at that than you, because not only do you know the stuff, not only do you know music, but you're passionate about it. Like you said, it kind of was like a second charge of an extension of the hobby, because, yeah, you've already collected the Hall & Oates records. I'm just using it as an but collecting them again for somebody else to enjoy, I mean, that has to be like a really cool thing.
That actually, I'm glad you hit that, because like that is the most fun part of the whole thing, is going out and finding the Phil Collins face value all over again, and like buying all of these things that you've had for 10, 15 years and never even look at anymore. Mm-hmm. That is what made it so much fun. And I think too, it's so easy for probably a lot of people here in the VC to take for granted the knowledge and what they know about records, where to get records, what's a fair price and what's not. A vast majority of people have no clue.
Right.
You know, is $30 for that Phil Collins, you know, face values, is that a fair price? They don't know. And of course we know, no, a used copy of that with ring around, no, that's not a $30 record.
Right.
But so, yeah, that just being able to share that knowledge with people that want to gather these collections, it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it can be kind of intimidating because it is a very, I mean, obviously it's a very niche hobby. Mm-hmm. A lot of the nuance, the sleeves, the cleaners, all that kind of stuff. If somebody is, you know, kind of start, especially now, I mean, I feel for people kind of getting a hobby. Exactly what we talked about with the Crosley situation and people just, you know, you got the audiophile shamers coming in after them. But for somebody starting now, that's why I'm always trying to encourage new channels, young people getting in the hobby, because there's just so much information now that you've had a long runway. I've had a long runway of learning these things, some through trial and error, some through sharing best practices through YouTube and other things, and journals and so forth. But it's got to be very daunting. And the fact that you can, it's twofold. You're helping somebody get closer to enjoying their own music collection, which I think is awesome. And then you're getting to like collect for them. So that's, and you're kind of like, it's for lack of a better word, yeah, you're getting paid for it, but it's like service, right? Like you're actually like serving the hobby. I think it's just like an awesome idea. And I don't know why anybody didn't think of it sooner. So if anybody's going to try to copycat this idea, go to hell. Brandon's got it and he's the best of it.
Exactly. I was just going to say like what you were saying about just being able to help people with stuff like that is like, even if it's just a curating a collection, I always extend, you know, if you guys ever have questions about needing to how to put together a system and all this type of stuff, you know, just give me a call. I'd be more than happy just kind of walk through that and give you ideas. And I've done that with a couple of clients as well, and it's been absolutely great. With this is my budget, this is kind of where I'm setting it up and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, you need to go with, you ought to go with powered speakers, you ought to do blah blah blah. It's just that, all that type of stuff. So it's
and
great
to me. No, and that to me is an extension of what the community should be, helping others. You know what I mean? Like just doing it. I mean, doing it because doing it's the right thing. But anyway, that'll be a follow-up conversation. We'll talk about that. But let's talk about it. So now we've made it to the lightning round. This is always the part we kind of ended on a light note here, Brandon.
Okay.
And so you know, nothing controversial, nothing like deep thinking, but just a couple questions kind of ended on a high note. One question I had, and this is just as your friend, what other kind of hobbies are you interested in or do besides vinyl and music collecting?
I don't know if it necessarily counts as a hobby, but traveling.
Okay.
And I mean, road tripping. Like, I love to just freaking get in a car and just go.
Sure.
I don't care where. I don't care. This past week, or 2 weekends ago, matter of fact, Randy and I, we went to the RV show in downtown St. Louis. You know, at the Dome, where they just
convention center.
And it's just like, I'm just daydreaming the entire time I'm in there. Just, oh, this is the life I need right here. Just getting on the road and going. So I guess traveling would probably be the biggest thing.
Awesome. So the next one is one I think I asked just about anyone, because I'm always curious how they come to an answer on this one. But let's say you have magical powers. You're a wizard, Brandon. And you can reunite a band or an artist. You can resurrect them. I mean, there's no barrier. You can pay them whatever. For one night only, one show only, who is that artist or band that you would want to see perform once?
This may be somewhat of a weak one, because, I mean, obviously you have like Jimmy and Zeppelin and blah, blah, blah. But I'm actually going to go with Black Sabbath.
Oh, okay.
I never got a chance to see Sabbath, and I've always thought like all the classic Sabbath tunes played in more of a modern day metal fashion, like they did with the reunion tour and all of that. Like, I've just always thought that'd be the most amazing thing to see live. And so I'm going to say Sabbath with like Ozzy and Dio being there.
Oh, Oh, interesting. Yeah,
that would be pretty freaking awesome.
I agree. All right, last one I got for you, my friend. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, there has to be a definitive, or maybe one of definitive times in the hobby collecting out in the wild, and you stumble across that piece, what I call the oh shit moment. You're like, oh shit. Like you literally audibly can't even, it just comes out of you. I'm assuming you've had though, and what's the one that you kind of think above all else where you're just like, you cannot believe your good luck? What was that piece, and tell us about it?
The one I remember the most that gave me like the my eyes open was a promo copy of Danzig 1. Oh, wow. With a hype sticker, perfect condition across the board. And you can relate to this because you've been to Vintage Vinyl a number of times. Yep. And you know, it's a long store.
Yes.
Well, back then it was actually almost on the back wall near the jazz. It was all the way back there. And you know, when you walk in the door, that's a cover you can recognize from, you know, 20 yards away, you recognize it. And I walked in the door and I remember having like my heart sank just knowing someone is going to grab that before I make it the 30 or 40 feet or whatever to get there. It was like an overwhelming fear as I'm walking and sliding by people. And I just knew someone was going to grab it. It was almost like this overwhelming anxiety. And I went and grabbed it, and it was like $40, which back then was like, $40 for an album. This is kind of, you must really be a collector. But oh my gosh, I just remember my heart pounding seeing that thing, and that was the longest walk ever.
I'm surprised you didn't just bust out a 40-yard dash like prime time and just book it, man. Because you know, like, what a terrible feeling it would have been if you see it and you've got a nice brisk mall walk going on, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, somebody just pops up and goes, "Oh!" So,
well, this is how stupid it was. The anxiety was actually making me think, if I get too aggressive going towards it, someone's going to see it and grab it before me.
Fair
enough. And You look back on it all after you grab it, and you're like, where was I coming up with that stupid stuff? But it was real in the moment.
That's so funny. Yeah, the mind plays tricks on us for sure. Love it. Well, Brandon, I'm glad we finally did this. Again, hopefully my interviewing chops have met the mark, because I didn't want to like just have a bunch of my buddies on here and you know, flub it up, and especially somebody who I've told you before and I'll tell you here. I hold in high regard, not just as a friend, but as a collector, because you've inspired me to improve my collecting in a lot of ways. So I'm glad we could finally do this. And obviously, you've been very generous. You've been on some of our panels before for Surface Noise and so forth. So to actually have you one-on-one in the hot seat, I'm glad we could do it, my friend.
No, me too, man. I really appreciate it. I've been so excited to have the opportunity to do it. So I'm glad we got it done.
Yep. And I'm going to have all the information, Brandon's channel, the Sounds of You curation business, all that in the show notes, so I'd highly recommend you check it out. Because Brandon, well, actually, I don't know if I can say this anymore. You don't have, did you finally relent and get a Facebook page?
Yeah, I did.
You're trying to hold out. I think my mom is the only one left who held out and does not have a Facebook page. But you had to do it for the curation thing, right?
Yeah. So I had like right at a year now. But I mean, I'd held off on Facebook and Instagram. I'd held off on Facebook and Instagram all the way up to last year.
Yeah. All good things must come to an end, I guess. But anyway, Brandon, Mr. Hall of Fame, one of the best, literally the OG of the vinyl community. Thanks for joining me, man.
I appreciate it, man.
And that was another trip around the turntable. Thanks for listening to Vinyl Community Podcasts.